Wednesday is for winners. That's right. It's a Wednesday edition of Locked On Panthers after a Florida Panthers win in New Jersey. Beautiful, scenic, tourist attraction, Newark, New Jersey. They beat the New Jersey Devils. They got a couple points. They won a game. And they look good doing it, so to speak. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about the line changes. We got trade deadline stuff and all this and more coming up on today's episode of Locked On Panthers. My name is Josh. I'm with PantherParkway.com. And he's back, folks. Joining me as always, my good friend and yours, Frank Rikus.
Good morning, everybody. Happy hump day. I am Frank Rikus, lead writer, owner, PantherParkway.com. Just to remind you, you are listening to Locked On Panthers. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And I apologize for not being here for Tuesday's show, but I had a, we'll call it a work engagement. It was our annual kickoff dinner, so to speak, for our firm. So I was there drinking loads of wine, eating lots of food, and celebrating the past year. So anyway, you boys did a good show.
Well, you know, if you need life insurance, make sure you check in with Frank. He can hook you up with all that. So
there you go. Thank you very much.
That's a free plug. He didn't even pay me for that one.
Very well. Thank you. So yeah, but you guys did a good show. I listened to it in the morning while I was at the gym, and you know, Dave is always a great guest to have.
I love Dave Lasseter.
He's one awesome. Of us. He's one of our brothers.
Absolutely. Well, you're listening to the Locked On Panthers podcast, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And we are on a roll here, Frank, 3 days in a row, even though you missed one. We are recording. We're talking hockey, and it's a good day to talk about Panthers hockey whenever we get to talk about a Panthers win. Of course, we talked about yesterday when you were absent, Frank, the game against Philadelphia on Monday night, the first of a back-to-back, Sergei Bobrovsky getting the start against his old team in Philadelphia. And kind of a crucial game for the Panthers as they scratched Mike Matheson, healthy scratch, sat him and said, you know, hey, we don't want you. We'd rather you sit in the press box tonight than play the game. Well, what a turnaround in just 24 hours, Frank, as Mike Matheson comes back into the lineup as a forward. What is going on? Now, you know a lot more about Joel Quenneville than I do. Is this a thing that he does? Is he like just taking defensemen and putting him on the fourth line? Because Mike Matheson comes back as a forward. They shuffle the lines. Noah Chari, Mark Pesek, and Mike Matheson, two defensemen and a forward playing on that fourth line. And they light the layup against the New Jersey Devils.
It's a very common thing. And it always comes at the most, I don't want to say inopportune, but like most surprising moment. All of a sudden, you'll see that, oh my gosh, we've got 11 forwards and 7 defensemen, and one of the defensemen is actually playing forward. Wow. And tonight, or excuse me, last night, he pulls it off with 2. Mike Matheson and Mark Pisick on the fourth line with Noel Achari. I mean, talk about rolling the dice and, you know, putting the names in the line blender and coming up with a line. And guess what? Those guys had a hell of a night together, huh? Who would have thought?
Wow. I mean, awesome. It was crazy. I mean, Mark Pesek, of course, has been a story all season, playing as a forward, coming up, having a hat trick against Toronto and all that. Mike Matheson, though, coming into the forward core, didn't really see that one coming, to be honest with you, Frank. And it makes some sense. I mean, Mike Matheson definitely has speed. He definitely has ability. He's talented. But he gets in there, and man, that Mike Matheson goal was a beautiful. That's the kind of goal you want to see your team score every night. Getting in there, banging in pucks down deep, you know, getting in the dirty areas, all those things that we talk about. They just looked phenomenal. Each guy on the line playing really well, racking up the points. And man, I mean, that's a win for Joel Quenneville, obviously, to be able to showcase Matheson's talent when maybe he doesn't have to be panicking all the time about coming back and defending. You know, it's interesting because when you think about defensemen, and this is what I want to talk about a little bit for a minute here, Frank. When you think about defensemen, usually when you're in peewee hockey, when you're a kid, you're growing up, you're kind of learning your role, you start to kind of gravitate towards different positions. So the kids who have rich parents become goalies because otherwise you can't afford all the gear. That's right. It's kind of hyperbole, but it's also kind of true. So there's that. And then there's the forwards and the defensemen. And typically it's the smarter, not to be mean, but typically it's the smarter or maybe more hockey IQ centered kids and young, you know, teenagers that end up gravitating towards playing defense because you have to be able to think really fast and make the right moves and everything else. And so the guys who maybe struggle with that a little bit and want to focus more on scoring and grinding and getting physical or whatever, they end up becoming forwards. So it is interesting whenever a defenseman does make that jump because, you know, you think, okay, this was a guy at one point that was probably the best player on his team. And so he was asked to be a defenseman because that's what you want. So when you got a guy like Mike Matheson or even Mark Pesek now jumping up to play forward, it's a little bit more of a relaxed role. You don't have as much pressure to skate backwards hard, to be the first one between the attacker and the goalie. And you can actually thrive in that environment and be able to showcase your skill a little bit better when that defensive pressure is off. And obviously it paid off against the New Jersey Devils.
Well, it sure did. And it looked as though Matheson was extremely comfortable in that position. I don't really know or if I could count too many mistakes that he really made. The goal he scored was beautiful, and I don't know if you watched it, kind of, you know, he guided it from his right skate to his stick and then, you know, shot it past Luis Domingue. And I mean, early on in the game, quick score for him. I mean, what a way to get started and hopefully get his confidence back. Now, whether this stays, your guess is as good as mine, everybody. But, you know, one thing that I was thinking about is, as you know, we've assembled this fourth line with Pisick and Matheson on the fourth line. You know, A, it shows that at least we have some depth, whether it's good enough depth or not. I think we've discussed that ad nauseum. But at least we've got other, you know, six other defensemen that we can put into the lineup. But what does it say about guys like Dennis Malgin and Jace Hauerluck, who now are struggling to get into the lineup because two natural-born defensemen are playing better than they are?
Well, it goes to different skill sets for sure. I mean, defensemen naturally are inclined to win battles against the boards and things like that, that maybe a guy like Dennis Malgin, who's smaller and not as physical of a player, is not going to thrive in that environment. We've been saying for a long time, Frank, that Dennis Malgin can't be a bottom line player. He can't. You know, that's not his skill set. He had a couple really good games at the beginning of the season when he was given an opportunity to center kind of that second or third line, depending on how you view which wingers he was with. Mm-hmm. So he's not that guy. He's not that guy who's going to bang in the corners and loosen the puck and play against top talent. He's just not that guy. When you put two defensemen out there with Matheson and Pesek, you know, you're really creating a crazy amount of defensive responsibility, at least on that fourth line, and you can pressure against teams better forwards because you know that those defensemen playing out forward are going to at least be able to physically win battles and against the boards and things like that. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, it doesn't look good, you know, for a guy like Jace Hauerluck, who's supposed to be, you know, one of those grinding guys who's able to kind of be that power forward sort of in the forecheck and everything. It doesn't look good for them. But it also speaks to the fact that the Florida Panthers are crunched up against the cap, and they're having to be creative now because it's not easy to just call someone up or do something simple. They're going to have to get creative here in order to be able to compete and, you know, good for Mike Matheson. You know, he gets in there, he gets some love, and hopefully that will instill some confidence back into him if and when he returns to the defensive side of the puck.
Yeah, I mean, the last few days he has been really been – he's taken the whipping on social media, and a lot of people are down on him. And, you know, yeah, he's had a very, very rough time. He's had a rough time for a long while. You know, he did have that little spurt, especially during the six-game winning streak, which I think we've all forgotten about, where he actually looked like he was finally, you know, coming around a little bit. His confidence looked to be back, and then – you know, once we got back from the All-Star break, all of a sudden, he just lost it. And, you know, I don't know if watching from upstairs was enough to rejuvenate him and, you know, get his mind straight. Maybe putting him at forward just takes a lot less pressure off of him. You know, you're in a fourth line role. You don't really have to do all that much. You know, what is your job? Your job is really to create some energy, try not to make too many mistakes as a forward. But for him, I think it really minimized his exposure to defense. And, you know, hey, we had a great victory last night, albeit it's the New Jersey Devils. So let's first not get really carried away. It's a team that we should have beat and we needed to beat, but we did. So let's bask in the glory of the 2 points that we got. And, you know, I'm curious if we see this against Philadelphia.
Well, like you said, Frank, it's a little hard to get excited about beating the New Jersey Devils.
Yeah.
You know, that's like beating up the kid in high school who's a ninth grader when you're a you know, 6'4" senior. You know, it's like, it's the, can you really brag about that one? You know, you should win that fight. You know, it's kind of the same situation. A game that they should win, a game that they have to win. Sam Montembeau getting the start in the back-to-back. Quinville's been doing for a bit here. He's been doing this thing where he's been starting Bobrovsky in back-to-backs both times. But after that shelling against the Flyers, I guess decided to go ahead and put Montembeau in. And, you know, the team came out and played the game they needed to play. Obviously, it helped that Hescher was out for the Devils, you know, and all that. But they played overall, I felt, a solid two-way game. They limited chances. Obviously, the Devils still got three, but they were able to kind of play a little bit more up-tempo style. Unfortunately, you don't get to play the New Jersey Devils every night, and there's going to be a lot more hard matchups here coming up in towards the end of the season. And so it's good to get 2 points. We shouldn't be pessimistic. But at the same time, you know, those were 2 points that should have been in the bag before they even got to the arena.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I think it was the right thing to start, Montembeau. I mean, Bobrovsky had played 9 games in a row. So, you know, that's a pretty hefty load. And with the schedule the way it is, I mean, I think 2 weeks in a row, the Panthers have played like 4 games in 6 nights. So, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of play for you know, anybody, especially your goaltender. And he's been facing a lot of rubber lately. So the night off, I think, should have done him good. I would imagine he'll be back in net against Philadelphia as well as Edmonton on Saturday afternoon. I mean, he's your guy. That's why you're paying him the big bucks. And, you know, a break here and there is fine. I just think that if Drager was here and healthy, I don't know that Bob would have started 9 games in a row. I think you might have slotted in Drager at least once in that segment, because I think the coaching staff and the Panthers have a little bit more faith in Drager than they do Montembeau. Could be
well,
wrong.
That does seem to be true.
You know, it's just my casual observation. You know, I've been right, you know, 100 times before. Maybe I'm right on this one too, but that's just what I think. But
no, I think you're right.
Job tonight, last night.
No, I think you're right. They definitely have struggled to put their confidence in Montembeau, though he played well. You know, Chris Drager definitely seems to have won that spot before going down with injury, you know, as the backup. So I think that's a good point and a fair point, Frank. But at the same time, you know, Sergei Bobrovsky is supposed to be the guy, and you want him to play. Right. You want him to see the puck. You know, you want him to get confidence even after a loss, and so you don't want to ruin that too much. But I agree with you. Thursday night, I think he'll play against the Flyers, and hopefully the Panthers can get a little bit of redemption from the Monday night game. And then Saturday, weirdly, a 4 p.m. start on a Saturday against the Edmonton Oilers, the Connor McDavid-less Edmonton Oilers, as he's out with injury. That can't be a bad thing for the Panthers to not have Connor McDavid playing against them, though it's kind of sad for the fans that want to see the best player in the world play the game. But so you got two games here against Philadelphia and Edmonton that are winnable games. They're winnable games if the Panthers are able to figure out how to play on both sides of the puck, and not only how to play on both sides of the puck, but who's playing on either side of the puck. Right. You know, they got to figure that out too, which is not normally a problem NHL teams have.
Well, and you know, we're talking so much and praising the fourth line. In the exact opposite analysis, the top line has gone invisible, even with Barkov back, and that's worrisome. You know, we need Barkov, Huberdeau, and Dadonov to be leading the offense, be you know, leading the charge, being dominant, and they just have not been. And it's against, you know, it's last night against New Jersey, the game before against Philadelphia, you know, a couple games before that. So I don't know if they've lost their mojo, if they're tired, if they're, like Dave said the other day, if they're still on the beach from the All-Star break. But they got to find it, because the Panthers are going to need them down the stretch. And I'm not really sure what the deal is, but they got to get back on track, because we're going to need them.
Yeah, you're right. And not only are we going to need them, but we're going to need to kind of figure out in the next couple weeks here what we're going to do as far as making moves and everything else. Of course, a lot of moves going on around the NHL, with Zucker being traded from the Minnesota Wild to the Pittsburgh Penguins. The deadline definitely is looming in the minds of NHL fans, but particularly NHL general managers, as that deadline is just February 24th. So, I mean, as we release this podcast, man, you're 12 days away. There's going to need to be some serious soul searching from general manager Dale Tallon as to regards to the Florida Panthers defense core. Number one, I think that we've all can kind of agree that's the number one issue. What are you going to do with the two pending UFAs in Evgeny Dadonov and Mike Hoffman? You know, what are you going to do other than that? Are you going to be a seller or a buyer? I mean, I would assume you're going to be a buyer, because they're kind of in it still. But at the same time, as we release this show, they are not in a playoff spot. They're 3 points behind the second wild card spot, 2 points behind the third spot in the Atlantic Division, though with a game in hand. So you look at that and you go, okay, you know, you're there, you're on the edge of it, but what do? Are you selling off your, you know, your UFAs? Are you looking to make a major hockey deal at the deadline here? What do you think, Frank? We talked a little bit about it with Dave, but what do you think the strategy should be? I have two questions for you. What do you think the strategy should be at the deadline, first? Second question, what's acceptable to you, short of a Stanley Cup? Like, what's an acceptable outcome for this season? Dave and I talked about this yesterday.
Okay, so the first question is, what do I expect to happen? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, unless they fall further behind, and, like, you know, so let's say we get to right around the trade deadline, which is, like, what did we say, the 24th. So if they're within 5 points of a spot, I would expect them to be a buyer. That's just what I expect. And it was interesting. I was listening on the way home tonight from the office. Randy Moeller was on SiriusXM NHL radio for a bit. And I caught only a part of the show, but while he was on there, but he expects to a trade to be made. He hasn't heard anything. He's not privy to anything. There's no rumors that he's heard about. So, you know, with that in mind, I think the focus still remains that we need to shore up the defense. And, you know, we're going to point back to the same players we continue to talk about: Alec Martinez, Sammy Vatanen on New Jersey, Jonas Brodin from the Minnesota Wild, Brendan Dillon from San Jose. And I was reading an article on The Athletic there's our plug for The Athletic, our free plug for The Athletic, that a real stretch of a player that could be available for the right price is Josh Manson from Anaheim. So if we're looking at defense, those are probably the top four or five guys that we would look at. I mean, I would love Josh Manson here. Young kid, if he has even half the pedigree of his father, Dave Manson, I mean, we would be getting Mr. McNasty here. But that being said, I think we're going to be buyers as long as we stay close. If we fall further behind, then, yeah, you're going to see some selling off. And that would be a real disappointment.
I don't know about Manson. I think from everything I've heard, the Ducks are in love with him.
And I no, don't they
know,
are.
I don't know they that are. They're going to be looking to move him. There's another defenseman on the Ducks that might.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. You can always, you know, you can come home.
Yeah, you know.
And whatever. talk about putting butts in the seats. That would put a lot of butts in the seats.
Well, it would definitely put your butt in the seat, Frank. That's all I know. But yeah, I mean, there's that opportunity. I don't know. I mean, I think we've talked about it before. There's a lot of defensemen that would appear to be available. However, you have to evaluate what kind of defensemen are they, and that's going to be the key for Dale Talon here in the next 12 days, is to decide what they need to address and also, quite honestly, who they need to move. Because as they make those decisions, it's not going to be just addition. It's going to have to be an addition and a subtraction. And absolutely. So you have to kind of look at the roster and be honest and say, okay, here's what we can do, and here's who we think is not going to contribute to this team this season and in the future. And, you know, who do we think can help contribute to the team right now? You know, the big point... And we'll get to the second question in a second, by the way, Frank. But the big point that Dave and I had yesterday, as you listened to the show, was this is not the time to hold on to assets for the future.
No,
you've got you know, two or three more years with this core, and if you really believe that they are a core that can win, then you need to surround them with the pieces that they need to win, and forget about prospects and you know, picks and things like that. Now, if you're not sure that they can win, blow it up, you know, and retool with the guys that you want to keep. But you have to make that decision. And honestly, you have to make that decision in the next 12 days. Because, you know, and this goes back to the second question, Frank, which you can answer for us. What's an acceptable outcome for the end of the season?
So if I'm not allowed to say a Stanley Cup championship,
right,
then... you have to win the first. You have to get in the playoffs. You have to win the first round, and you need to at least be competitive in round two. And what is to me, what does competitive mean? It would be great if you could win round two. That would be outstanding. But I don't want to sweep, so I would hope that we could at least go 4-2, 4-3. I'd like to see a 6 or 7 game second rounder performance out of the Panthers again. My ultimate goal is always to win the Stanley Cup, but if that's off the table, what's the next best thing? Then I think realistically, if we've added the right piece or two and subtracted the right piece or two, that's the only thing that would be acceptable to me. Not making the playoffs, that's not acceptable. Getting bounced in the first round is not acceptable either. We haven't won a round since 1996. 24 years. That's absurd.
Well, fans, what do you think? What's an acceptable ending to the season other than a Stanley Cup? I know that's a weird way to put it, but always we want to win the Stanley Cup. Only one team can win the Stanley Cup. So what's an acceptable ending to the season? I think both you and Dave Frank kind of had high standards. You know, hey, you gotta not just get in the playoffs. That's not, you know, the participation trophy, a consolation prize. You need to win a round. And, you know, that should be the goal for the team. And for a long time, the goal was just make the playoffs. But that's not going to cut it at this point with this much money, this much time, this much investment, this much talent, this much, you know, emphasis on coaching. It's just not an acceptable outcome to just make the playoffs and then go out of the first round and say, oh, we tried. You know, it's got to be more than that.
You can't spend all this money on players. You can't spend all this money on a head coach and then just – not progress at all. And again, not making the playoffs would be not progressing. And as much money as we're spending, geez, we need to be so much better than we've shown. So, and I'm not talking about being better against just a team like New Jersey. I'm talking about being better against, Pittsburgh, Tampa, Boston, Washington. I mean, those are the teams that you're going to have to go through in the Eastern Conference if you expect to do any damage in the playoffs. But again, for the amount of money that the Florida Panthers are spending, and for what Vinny Viola and Doug Cifu have invested in the team, I mean, it's time to put up or shut the hell up.
Absolutely, I agree. So, hey fans, let us know what you think. Tomorrow's Talk Back Thursday. I want to know, what do you think is an acceptable conclusion to this season short of a Stanley Cup? Call us 954-228-0630 and you can leave a voicemail. We'll play it here on the show and we'll talk about what you think, because I think all fans of the Panthers right now are kind of feeling similar to what we're talking about here, Frank. So I want to hear from a few other Panther fans as well. So 954-228-0630. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at Panther Parkway. We post our articles, we post opinions, funny gifs, in-game commentary, breaking news, like the return of the Mighty Ducks to Disney Plus. It's going to be fun. So make sure you check that out. But we got lots of fun stuff there. And make sure you check out the website as well. It's New York Times of Florida Panthers news and information, pantherparkway.com. You can also follow Frank on Twitter at Frank Rikus. And you can follow me at Josh underscore LO Panthers. Don't forget to call in for Thursday's show for this edition of Locked On Panthers. I'm Josh.
I'm Frank.
Thank you for listening.